Hi, this is Iking Reyes, and you're on The Inspiring Leader. It's a podcast where we talk about things and stuff about work, life, and learning. Our guest for this episode is Mr. Gary De Ocampo. He's a former president of the Marketing and Opinion Research Society of the Philippines, a longtime managing director for Taylor, Nelson, and Softress Philippines, and currently the Chief Executive Officer of the Insights Group for Kantar Philippines, a group that includes Kantar TNS, Kantar Millward Brown, and Kantar Added Value. Sir Gary, thank you for joining the podcast.
Thank you very much, Iking. And hi, everyone.
You were an academic overachiever as a student, from being a high school valedictorian to a college magna cum laude. How do you think academic excellence impacted your success as an executive?
Wow, that's a very good question, because that question requires a lot of introspection. And also, that's very interesting because we know that a lot of things that influence us are not even known to us. But as far as I can realize, I really think that the greatest impact of my schooling on my corporate career has been the memories and the discipline that came out of enjoying intellectual stimulation and artistic expression, as well as the expectation from myself that as I enjoy doing what I do, I would naturally come out on top. I was in fact valedictorian from kindergarten to elementary and high school. And you know what? If I try to recall the stickiest memories from those years, I would say the immersive feeling of trying to draw straight lines when I was in kinder. Of participating in countless quiz bee competitions, drawing and painting contests, and science fairs in grade school, and just completely enjoying physics in high school. And then in college, I was completely into calculus and, of course, statistics. But I never really got to apply physics, calculus to my corporate work. And admittedly, have only used the most basic and some of the moderately complicated statistics principles and methods. But I did find a way to derive the same satisfying intellectual stimulation and artistic expression in our insights consulting work. You know what? I've heard several comments from different people that a lot of what is taught in schools do not find meaningful application in the real world. And partly I agree, but I'm also persuaded that even if what is exactly taught, you know, the formulas, the definitions, the memorization, etc., does not really travel over to the real world, the experience, the habits and the lasting memories do. So in my case, I still long for the intellectual satisfaction I got from all those years of schooling. And that feeds my curiosity about things that are relevant now to my work. And it sustains me through the challenges of cracking issues, whether they be of our clients or our own organization. And further, I've also found somehow a way to satisfy my need for artistic expression in designing programs for our clients, structures and plans for our organization, and how to communicate these plans and the results of those plans visually and auditorily. So I believe, Iking, that anyone won't help but bring our true selves into our work. And many times that that's different from how we paint ourselves in our job application interviews, right? So while academic excellence may not always be a good predictor of how we make it in the careers we choose, I'm still persuaded it does influence it in more ways than one.
You went from statistician to general manager in about 15 years, moving up through the ranks at an accelerated pace. What do you think were the qualities that helped you ascend in the corporate world?
It's actually a longer story than expected. what I don't include anymore in my LinkedIn profile, but of course it's not a secret in any way, is that I spent about 5 years doing church work. In between being a statistician in the Department of Finance and joining the private sector at 28 years old. Medyo late na yon in the game, di ba? A bit late compared to most corporate people. However, I must say that being part of the ministry to the poor, the youth, and the working segment gave me the mindset and I'd say attitude I needed to thrive in our industry. And that is the attitude of service. I believe I'm what most people may call a hesitant leader because I don't tend to lead for the sake of leading. I don't really enjoy being in front, although I do move to the front when I know I need to. I know that a big part of my psyche is a desire to be of value to others, whether we're talking about clients or bosses or colleagues and people reporting to me. So I know that there's a shadow or a dark side to it, if we may call it that, which shows up occasionally, and that is the trap to be a people pleaser. But then again, it has a good side. And the good side of it is service. It doesn't mean, however, that I allow people to abuse me or be unfair to me. No, of course not. In fact, on the other hand, I have a strong sense of justice. And I do tend to insist on what is right. So let me give you an example. I remember when I was still a junior researcher in TNS. I think it was then Taylor Nelson Softpress, which later on became TNS. There was one Sunday when I was a junior researcher or a middle manager. Our top client called me up to ask whether it was okay to discuss business concerns on a Sunday. Diba? On a Sunday. So I was really very nervous, but I steeled myself to say no. It was not okay because I considered Sunday sacred. But then again, I offered an early Monday morning call when the client could have my full attention and commitment to provide whatever help was required to address his business issues. So needless to say, that account kept on growing. Yeah. And then I also strive very hard to be of great value to my boss. And in fact, I tend to talk about it now when I speak with new employees within Kantar. That is about making your bosses useless. But let me assure you that that is certainly no disrespect to the senior people in our company, but more an encouragement for excellence, for taking the pivotal extra step in all that you do. So again, when I was still a junior researcher, my boss usually asked me if she needed to accompany me to do presentations to our top clients' management committees. Of course, in the first few times, I had to say yes. Nakakatakot, diba? But very quickly, I began to have the confidence to say I could do it fairly well on my own. And it paid off, obviously. as my boss was able to focus on growing other parts of the business without any concern about the corner, she had given her full trust to me to manage and grow as well. So that behavior became my ticket to my almost yearly promotion until I became president of the company in 2008. And then when I was an account director, my team oversaw our company's biggest accounts. We were the hardest working team, and periodically we had to work overnight to deliver well. I'm sure you're familiar with such things that happen at work. Now, but ordinarily, we were the team that would go home at 6 p.m. every day, because I kept reminding the people reporting to me that there was life outside of the company, which they should enjoy living. So you see, even from the start, I knew it was my responsibility and service to them, being their boss, to make sure that they do enjoy life outside of the company. So the principle I'm getting from this is that I really think that the less self-orientated you are, the more successful you can become. And that applies to wherever you are and whatever you're doing.
You have been in the field of market research and consulting for several decades now. How do you think the industry has evolved throughout the years?
Well, I really think that the industry has changed a lot over the years. And it continues to change, likely at an even faster pace. It used to be that the expectations of clients from market research agencies was more of providing data to them. And over many years, that was challenged. And there was increasingly greater expectation of added value, that is business recommendations, instead of just giving data. That's why the phrase data dump became a byword in the industry as a way to criticize research work that failed to deliver anything more than data tables pasted in PowerPoint for presentations with headlines that were simply descriptive of the numbers. And I remember that the clients would quip, I could have just read that myself. Diba? Nakakahiya, ano? So as a response to that growing demand from clients, many agencies, mostly the big ones, but there have also been some of the small and medium-sized ones, began tilting the focus of our services to insight consulting. If you can remember, Aking, the TNS strapline became the sixth sense of business. Another legacy brand of Kantar, Millward Brown, shouted, growing great brands. Diba? So we introduced into our service mix brand consulting frameworks and made use of global data across product and service categories to build normative databases. And consulting learning exploded from all that effort. Now, for Kantar, which is a Mediterranean word that means measure, this effort culminated in our current strapline, understand people, inspire growth. So we have proven time and time again that understanding people goes way beyond running surveys. Because while there remain to be powerful questions that are being asked in surveys today, and which we, of course, should continue to ask, there are countless occasions and topics that asking questions is not the best approach to understanding people so we can inspire business growth. And this is the reason the marketing and research sectors are now making use of multiple sources of information beyond surveys and desk research. So for example, we have social media to harvest data from, which gives us understanding of unfettered expression of sentiments of online consumers. There is also a much more highly developed data science and analytics to surface patterns that cannot be detected using the usual simple cross-tabulation of variables. So this evolution of how we do things and how we deliver them to clients has also resulted in a segmentation of sorts among the players in our industry. So there are those who have decided that they will focus on data collection only, with further segmentation into online data collection and offline data collection, or even quantitative and qualitative. And then there are those that do data processing only, or both field work and data processing. There are those who offer full but traditional research services. There are those who offer proprietary branded research products and services that deliver both data and business recommendations. And then there are those that have begun stepping into the world of business consulting without, of course, leaving behind the industry's strength in consumer understanding. Now, this last type is where Kantar's ambition is headed. And that's why we amplify the Kantar promise: understand people, inspire growth.
What do you think would be the emerging consumer values as we begin to move on from the pandemic?
Well, Iking, I'm not sure if we should really start thinking about moving on from the pandemic, because it looks like the pandemic will be with us for several years more. And I think that is even more so true here in the Philippines, given how minimal our country's progress has been in managing the situation. So I think it is more productive and practical to think about the current situation and accept the reality that while it will continue to evolve, it will be with us for several more years. So that the challenge is really how to live with it, live through it, and make the most of, out of it. So Kantar has been monitoring consumer behaviors and values across 60 countries since the start of the pandemic last year. Obviously, what seemed unusual in the previous years, masks plus shields in the Philippines, closed country borders, home quarantines, and lockdowns have become our new normal. We all know that already. As a result, our behaviors have changed as well. So we are creating new rituals, diba? How many of us have weekend family Zoom calls? Diba? My goodness. And then we have new things that we like. Who now have their favorite food, whether cooked or raw, delivery numbers, bookmark, diba? And we have also come up with new priorities. Who among us have taken up new hobbies or gotten back to ones from the past, like I have? I've gone back to drawing in my free time. So at the start of this crisis last year, we actually offered support to our clients by defining four scenarios. One, it could be just a panic attack. Two, a close call. Three, a recurring nightmare. And four, a brave new world. Now, obviously, the first two scenarios, panic attack, close call, are now out of the question. Depending on one's perspective, it is now really a toss between whether our situation is a recurring nightmare or a brave new world. And we think that the reality will depend on how the virus will evolve further, how institutions, which refer to both the government and businesses, will respond to the situation, and finally, how consumers will react to the situation. So from the start, we have encouraged our clients to be ready for each of the scenarios. Now, in terms of consumer values that will continue to influence how their behaviors will evolve and which our clients should be taking into account in their business plans, we are focusing on at least three. One, health and well-being. Two, stay-at-home lifestyles. And then three, digital. So as the panic subsides with regard to health and well-being and becomes part of the usual, with some people lowering their guard due to panic fatigue, it will nonetheless remain as one of the most important areas of life. So how health and well-being will look in a recurring nightmares scenario is for us to define and describe, and how that will be different in a brave new world. And then, of course, our homes are now our new lifestyle hub. Yes, we occasionally venture out because we have to, right? But mostly only within our environs. So studying people's lives lived within homes will certainly open up huge opportunities for learning and offering products and services from both government and businesses. And then, of course, the last one is digital. The online world is diversifying, it's deepening. And a lot has already been done, of course, to make this happen. But what more and how else should digital be switched on to serve the pandemic life better? So as you can imagine, this requires ongoing investigation. And Kantar is doing it. In fact, Iking, we have just completed our eighth wave of our COVID barometer, and we will be sharing the results with our clients shortly. So what we have started to see in the outcome of the study is that there are at least three factors that will determine which of the shifts in values and behaviors will be here to stay. So one, has the experience with institutional response been positive? That is it more convenient? Is it cheaper? Is it fun? Number two, are there enough prominent cues to trigger continued behavior? For example, public sanitizer dispensers will help encourage continued at-home use too. And then number three, the sustained period of enforced behavior will definitely become familiar. So for example, your established commuting route to local stores will likely drive usage long after all these quarantines and lockdowns are eased. So yeah, it will be interesting to learn more as we go along. And as I said, Kantar is helping our clients do that.
You've posted several portraits you have done during the lockdown days. When did you first notice your talent in painting? And would you consider having an exhibit in the future? Do you prefer painting via the tablet or over a canvas?
Well, I've always considered the visual arts my first love. The visual arts has been with me from as long as I can remember. It has always been my addiction. I grew up with comics. And as I said, I was into practically all the drawing and painting contests that there were in my grade school days. I started doing charcoal portraits in high school, which was also the time when one friend of mine and I also did all the names in the diploma of everyone who graduated from our school. So we're talking about thousands of diplomas, and we would do the calligraphy to put their names on the diploma. I completed my first full comic book and did the mural on the walls of a kindergarten school when I was in college. So I'm not sure though if I will ever mount an exhibit. It hasn't crossed my mind, honestly. I just like doing it, though not as often as before I started working in our industry right now. I would say that digital art has its unique attraction, and I do enjoy doing it, especially in the tablet, as you mentioned, because it's very flexible. There are a lot of various tools available all at once, and also because it's very easy. I don't have to clean up after I'm done. But there is the irreplaceable enjoyment and satisfaction as well of drawing or painting on a board or a canvas. And I'm sure I'll go back to that in the future, which, well, when I can allot more time to it. Yeah. But as I was saying, visual arts was my first love. But sometimes first love is not your greatest love. In anybody's lifetime, you come across something else that you then consider your greatest love. But definitely, I still continue to love visual arts.
To end the podcast, may I request that you please share with us some words of encouragement for anyone listening who would like to make their own mark in the world?
Thank you very much, Nikki, for giving me this opportunity to share my story and to share some of the lessons I've learned so far. Maybe I'd like to go back to what I said earlier about less self-orientation. I think that in whatever field one is, we should devote ourselves to serving others, whether our clients, our bosses, our peers, or those reporting to us. Nothing, and I'm saying this based on my experience, nothing can ever replace the high of extending value to others. And it doesn't have to mean we experience lack as we give of ourselves. In fact, just based on my experience, when you are consumed by this others orientation, wanting and working to be of real value to others with proper boundaries, of course, I think anyone, you, will eventually be surprised with how far you have gone.
That's it for today. Let me know what you think. Send in some questions and perhaps share this episode with people you know who might be interested to listen. Till the next episode, cheers!